Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
All right, quick thank you before we get started to our sponsor of this episode, Austin Jarrow, Duluth's original running store. That's the place to get your running shoes. Great advice from all the people that work up there. Check out their website, austin-jarrow.com. They are also on Facebook and Instagram. Drive on up to their location on Central Entrance, just on the other side of where the Home Depot is, but on the other side of the road. Or give them a call, 218-722-1185. Thanks so much to Austin Jarrow. All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Duluth Rundown, episode number 64 of our, I'd like to say, award-winning podcast, but we have not won a single award in our 3 years.
I think we're, like, known, though, as the top running-based, Duluth-focused podcast out there.
I think we're, yeah, famous for that.
At least top three.
Yeah, definitely in the top three.
We're definitely in the top three.
Yeah. Yeah, so thanks, everyone, for joining us again, and I don't know, let's just get right into it with, we've got the interview portion coming up later, but we'll get into it with the rundown section.
All right, let's get right into it. We'll start with race results. Cannot find race results for the Brimson Sisu 4K, so if you are a race director or involved in the race anyway, maybe give us a shout so we can shout out your results. We do have results, though, from the Lost Forester, which is a fun adventure race in Cloquet, Minnesota, at the Pine Valley System. We had a couple different loop options. For the 5.5K run, Joe Fournier from Proctor won with 30.11. And then third place overall, winner for women, Ruth Reeves out of Esco with a 43.59. And the 8 mile version, Cody Bork Anderson, 24 years old, won 2:52.32. And then on the female side, Katarina Svensson, 2:53.21. And then finally in the long distance, the 11K two loops, Bill Helwig won, hour 37.58. And then second place overall, first female, Ann Lou Hovis, hour 41.25. And then moving on, we have two different sets of results from the NMTC Fall Trail Series, which kicked off, almost 3 weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. And we had the Lester Park race to start off the season. Alex Hedorn won that one. And then the first place female, Hannah Torvey, who I believe, without going into the record books, won the series last year. So starting off hot for Hannah with a win. And 106 finishers in that Lester race, so not too bad. And Zaps Loop, which was last Wednesday as we record, Ben Cogger won 35.35. And then Hannah Torvey again starting off hot, 42.03, to take the win on the women's side. And 84 finishers there.
What was the distance on that one, does it say?
Ooh, I don't know for sure. And also, we try, since they're logging gender neutral, mm-hmm, people, I can't find either the distance, so
okay,
sorry.
Yeah,
sorry,
no problem.
About that.
No problem.
Moving on to the Minnesota Mile. Let's see, we have a variety of different categories here, but we can just go with the men's and the females, men's and women's competitive. Men's competitive was won by Kendall Hill, 25 years old from Duluth, 4:31. And then on the women's side, women's competitive, Madeline Strandimo, 28 from Duluth, won with a 4:59. Nice work going under 5 minutes. Then finally, we have results that were more or less live results from just yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, mainly yesterday, from the Superior Fall Trail Races. So 100-miler out of Broomfield, Colorado, was Kyle Moss, who took the win in the 100-mile distance, 19 hours and 40 minutes. Gretchen Metza from the Iron Range Boole, Minnesota, won in course record fashion, second place overall, first place female, 21 hours, 54 minutes. Mm-hmm. Impressive effort. On the 50-mile side, another course record. Out of Duluth, Minnesota, Tyler Kobylarczyk wins 8 hours, 12 minutes, 27 seconds. And then on the women's side, fourth place overall, JC Thompson, 9 hours, 22 minutes for the 50-miler. So that might be a course record as well, which I believe Gretchen Metza had or potentially currently has the 50-mile course record as well.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know for sure and don't have the log books right in front of us, but for the marathon, Evan Wetzel from Madison, Wisconsin. I swear Evan used to live in Duluth or something. Yeah. That name sounds so familiar.
There's a couple of names on that list, actually, yeah, that I was looking at that looked familiar.
Yeah, Evan took the win from wherever he's from or calls his home. He logged a 3-hour, 43-minute finish time to take the win. And then on the female side, excuse me as I scroll down, Leanne Simons from Two Harbors took the win. 17th overall, first place in the ladies with a 4:55.01. So a lot of runners out there, what, almost 600, several hundred people crossing the finish line at Lutzen yesterday. So,
and Mike, you ran the 50.
I did.
To give us a little race report, how did it go for you?
It went really good. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it was pristine conditions, I thought.
Yeah.
It was nice and cool. Mm-hmm. The trail was a little bit greasy in spots, especially I thought on some of the routes.
Yeah.
Like the boardwalks sometimes can be tricky, but those seem to be like tacky enough. The rocks seem to be okay, but the routes specifically seemed a little slick for whatever reason.
Yeah.
There were some mud spots, you know, it's been raining the last week, a little bit more than kind of the whole rest of the summer, it seems. But yeah, as always, you know, the race was put on just meticulously.
Right.
Volunteers were awesome. Yeah. And many spectators.
Yeah.
And so great day to be in the woods.
And you finished what, six overall? Did you hit a time goal?
My goal was 10 hours and I was able to sneak under that with a 9:50. So pretty pleased with that. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's tremendous. Congrats on that. That's good stuff.
Thanks.
It was really good conditions. I was up there watching, and it was maybe a touch humid. And thus the rain later on in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, cloudy and relatively cool. And like you say, it looked to me like the trail was pretty tacky.
It was. Yeah. Overall, I mean, can you get perfect conditions? I mean,
especially over 50 miles, there's always going to be something.
Right.
You know, or 100 miles or whatever.
But about as perfect as it can get, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, very cool.
Beautiful day.
It had been a little while since I had been up there. It's probably been, I think, at 2019 is the last time I was up there for the race.
Okay.
And one thing I noticed, so many new faces.
Yeah.
Just, you know, used to be, I was up there every year from like 2000, I think, 11 to 19. I was pretty much up there every year. And you just see the same people all the time. And it's kind of like changed in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I saw a few old timers that I knew that had been around for a long time. But, just so many new faces, which was pretty cool, actually.
You get a little taste of the North Shore, it grips you a little bit, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Regarding upcoming races, we have a couple. So, next up is the North Shore Run, which is part of the North Shore Inline Marathon weekend. Of course, the inline races are going on as well, but also there is the half marathon, which is very similar to the Gary Bjorklund half marathon course on Scenic Highway 61 through the tunnels to get back in town to finish, as well as the Tunnel 10K, which is a unique opportunity to run through the I-35 tunnels through Duluth.
Yeah.
Registration is still open for both of them. Online registration closes tonight, Sunday evening, which I don't even know if this podcast will be out by then. But you can still sign up on site at the expo. The race is on Saturday, September 16th. Next, we have several more NMTC fall trail series races yet this year. The next one, which is this Wednesday, I closed out of it, so excuse me as I pull this back up. What one's next here? Hartley. Yep, Hartley is on Wednesday, September 13th. Browns Point Superior, Rock Hill at Bagley. All the classics still have yet to occur leading up to the final race at Hawk Ridge on October 29th. So we'll be shouting out those October ones next month. But
yep.
Definitely a good opportunity. Still a couple Wednesday night races in the month of September to go check out. From there, we have a couple races into October, but likely not before we'll have another podcast. So we have the TC Marathon weekend. This isn't a local race, but a lot, so many runners, mm-hmm. you know, go down to the Twin Cities Marathon, the TC 10 mile, or even the 5K and the 10K. That is on September 30th, and the marathon is actually on Sunday, mm-hmm. October 1st. So that weekend, a lot of different races down in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And then finally, that following weekend on Saturday, September 7th, we have the Duluth Bridging the Gap women's 10-miler. Mm-hmm. So it's a women's only event, 10 miles, awesome course, and registration is still available for that. So a couple fun races still yet coming up in the season here. And from a training perspective, you know, trails are your thing. Getting into trail conditions, kind of prime season. This is like when the itchy plants start to subside, the bugs go away a little bit. I love fall trail running.
Yeah, definitely. The weather cools. So one thing that I heard, my wife ran the 50 miler and there was no bees or anything. I don't know if you had any experience.
Nope.
Yeah, I think the cooler weather kind of prior kind of made them a little more docile, and
yeah,
and that's a nice thing, because I've been stung in Hartley this year in the summer more than I've ever been stung, and I didn't even run in Hartley very much.
Right.
So it was, for some reason, it seemed like a bad year for bees.
Yeah.
This year, but yeah, this time of the year you don't have them as much, which is nice.
It is nice, you know, into the heat of the summer, especially July, August, it can get a little bit brutal being on the trails, and the less maintained, the more of a challenge, I guess.
And I think it can actually get warmer in there too, because you don't get any kind of breeze.
Right.
Once the trees get fully foliaged out.
Yep.
And if it's a hot day, the heat just kind of gets trapped in there. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, now you don't have to worry about it so much.
Yeah. Really, the only thing to watch out for is, you know, in this part of the world, it can get kind of rainy in the fall sometimes, and mm-hmm. Just without that greenery, that the plants, you know, sucking up that water from the ground so much, even like a inch or 2 inch rain can cause the trails to get kind of muddy and water on them. So it just be careful to look out for that. If you are making a footprint, maybe turn around, go on the road or gravel road or something like that. And what about trail conditions at your home turf in Hartley? That sounds like there's some new trails that have been built recently, huh?
Yeah, I guess not sort of built, or just I guess redesigned.
Mm-hmm.
That section between the Wet Meadow and Pines has been changed a little bit. They've kind of widened the trail. It's almost like what I would call double track.
Yeah,
and they've added a few berms to it, I think, for drainage purposes, and because there's always kind of a couple of low spots there that would happen. And then I think a little bit of Romness and the Pines Trail itself that goes towards Tunnel Trail, Tunnel Trail, depending on your direction.
Mm-hmm.
That's all been changed too, where instead of a straight shoot right through the pines, it kind of twists a little bit more, not a lot,
mm-hmm.
but a little bit more. And again, they widened it out and they added some berms to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bit of a shock. I don't know. I hope the reason was drainage,
and
I'm sure that's probably the main reason.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I guess my one concern, would be, because of the berms, can the mountain bikers kind of get in and rip through there a little bit quicker? And I don't know.
Sure.
And then because that trail is so heavily trafficked.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. The dog walkers are still getting out to that point.
Well, yeah.
Not necessarily guardrail, mm-hmm. but at least at that point they're at the Pines, because that's like the
Pines, yeah.
early part of the Pines if you're coming from the nature
so
center.
So central anyways.
It's so central, yeah. I would just be worried about the mountain bikers just shredding through there
yeah.
super fast with runners and hikers.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's not going to be any incidents. I'm sure that's going to be just fine. But that was my one kind of thought that I was like, yeah. oh, will this be too fast now?
Sure, sure. I actually mountain biked through there.
You have?
It was very flowy, fast.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. But not necessarily any more or like any faster than it was.
Than it used to be. Correct. Right. Because it was just a straight shot.
It was kind of a straight shot. So.
And I hope that's the case.
Yeah. But it's funny you mentioned how wide it is, because I noticed the same thing. Like, this is like a super highway.
Right.
Plus, no roots, no rocks. Like, they must have brought in dirt or like filtered it. I don't know how they do to build it. But
yeah.
that thing was just smooth as a track, you know? And but then I realized, like, I wonder if it just looks so wide and the vegetation grows in eventually, it's going to seem like normal. But
That's a good point. Yeah, that could be.
Kind of just interesting to see a new trail get built and kind of the life cycle of trails.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
yeah. I think it'll be a benefit to the trail system.
I think so, too. Yeah, there were definitely spots, especially on that straight section through the Pines, that it was kind of almost always wet.
Yeah.
That low point.
Rutted.
There. Yeah.
Wasn't really like a good path.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overgrown and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. For gear review, I wanted to do a little bit of a spin on the gear review, where it's not actually gear that I or you, well, maybe you, I guess, but not really gear that we're necessarily like reviewing as like a, I've tried it, here's what I like, here's what I don't like, but more like a review and the concept. Wanted to talk about, Tony, I heard more about carbon plated shoes at a trail race yesterday at Superior Fall than I ever had, to the point I didn't even realize they made carbon plated trail shoes.
Yeah, they do.
And a local runner, Jacob Wortman, who, a little shout out here, he placed third overall under 9 hours yesterday.
Yeah.
It was the stout time. He was saying he was running in his Nike carbon plated shoes. And I thought for like several miles, that is dark, you know, can't see. He was talking about like Alpha Flies, like a road shoe.
Yeah.
Like, those things look so unstable. How is he possibly going to do this? And then, you know, he told me it was a trail specific shoe that Nike developed with the carbon plate technology. So what do you think about that? Weird, huh?
Yeah. Well, one, I guess I'm personally not a fan of the carbon plate shoe anyway. So I'm coming from it from a bit of a negative viewpoint as is. That's just me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I try to steer away from that as much as I can and just try to think of it as most people do, just another tool to help.
Mm-hmm.
With regards to the carbon plated shoe on the trails,
yeah
Nike knows better than I do, so
right.
they're probably correct in that they're going to work, and they've figured out how to make them work.
Yeah,
to me it seems like the trails, I gotta back up a little bit, because one thing that makes the carbon plated shoes faster is not only the carbon plate, but also in addition the different kinds of foams, and so they kind of work together, particularly with the Alpha Flies and the Nike shoes. I can't speak to the other brands and their carbon plated options, but the Nike Zoom X foam is a PBAX based foam, which has got a little more pop, and so but it's soft at the same time. And I don't know. You also, I'm hesitating here too, again, also trail shoes in the past often had plates in them. We called them rock plates.
Rock plate, yeah.
To protect you from stone bruises and things along that line. But they weren't necessarily a performance enhancer
energy
in the trail.
Return,
energy return or a spring kind of mechanism or a catapult mechanism.
Yeah.
They were purely for protection.
Right.
So you could argue that, I guess, then the carbon plate is doing this as well. It's acting as a rock plate.
Yeah, why wouldn't it?
It's just carbon, and so it's probably lighter than the materials that they used in the past.
Or
and probably,
like
probably stronger.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's basically more protective than the old rock plates. Not all trail shoes had rock plates back in the day, and some still probably use a traditional rock plate of some sort.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, I don't know, I'm sure that they make people faster, because I don't think there's any question now at this point that the road shoes, people run faster.
How much faster, though?
How much faster, exactly. And
How much does the mental, like, I am faster, especially at a 50 mile? I mean, a marathon where, like, you know, you're turning the dial 0.1% to shave off 5 minutes or something, or 5 seconds or something, per mile or whatever. I mean, like, anything that happens, you mess up your nutrition, you just are in a dark place mentally, and that can add on 3 hours on a 50 mile, just because you're not in the right mental space.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little more, like, pure physicality on, like, a road marathon. And
that's what I think, too. Yeah.
So, it was weird. And this might put things into perspective a little bit as well, as I talked to another person. Well, local runner Jacob, talked to him a little bit about his, which I'll get to in a sec, but also another guy out there I was running with for a bit, he said, well, I'm 42, I'll take every advantage I can get.
Right.
So he thought that it was making an impact on the ones or not.
Correct.
And then Jacob was joking, which was a very, very funny joke. He said his fastest time at Voyager, he gets to shave 7 minutes off because he wasn't wearing a carbon shoe at that time. So, like, that's the new standard, right?
Right, right.
Which is the funny joke.
Right.
Is that the standard has now, like, that's the bar.
You have two PRs, your non-carbon shoe plated shoes and your carbon plated shoes. Yeah.
But I had frankly, like, and this is maybe just being out of the shoe world, not in it enough or something, I didn't really realize they had the trail-specific carbon, so.
Yeah. I don't know enough about them. My guess is the stack height is a lot lower than, say, like the Alpha Flies.
Yeah.
And some of the road ones, particularly the carbon-plated marathon road shoes that you see, which have pretty big stack heights.
They look different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
My guess is the trail ones are going to be a little lower, so you're closer to the ground and have a better balance.
Well, I saw Hoka, one that was a Hoka, and it wasn't the huge stack height Hoka, so it was kind of like a trail racer style.
Yep. Right.
Exactly.
You know, speaking of shoes, the race up there, this isn't necessarily carbon plated, but when you said Hoka, it popped in my head. Hoka and Ultra dominated the shoe wearers up there.
Yeah.
By far. It wasn't even close.
Yeah.
There was a few Nikes that I saw. There was I see occasional Peregrine and maybe some Salomons.
Yeah.
But it was Ultra and Speed Goats, particularly Speed Goats. Yeah. By far.
One pair of Brooks.
Yeah, there's a... I forgot, Cascadia. Yeah. I did see some Cascadias. I forgot about that. Yeah, and Gretchen wore her old cart, Calderas. But, but yeah, Ultra and Hoka by far.
Huh.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Yeah. It makes me want to try trail shoes with the carbon plate. I did try the carbon plate, if our most dedicated listeners remember back in Grandma's, I ran Grandma's marathon and I had a great race, so X factor, I don't know.
Yeah. Yep.
But also I don't want to make a draw for my 401k retirement savings. Really, it's expensive.
Well, they are, but yeah.
That's not worth 1% improvement. Not. 275 bucks? No. Funny. Next, we have some thoughts on the run. Tony, what have you been kind of dwelling over on your jogs lately?
Well, and really, these are more just kind of tidbits and things that I've popped up in the news that I wouldn't call them necessarily purely thoughts on the run. But one was, we just recently had the World Championships, the Track and Field World Championships.
Mm-hmm.
And Noah Lyles, multiple-time world champion from the U.S., 100-meter, 200-meter runner, Olympic medalist. He had a comment after he won, I believe, a second gold, maybe even that, because I think he won 3 golds, he won relay team as well, that he said something to the effect of, in the NBA, they call themselves world champions, but they're not truly world champions because it's really just pretty much the U.S., one of the Canadians, where in track and field, world championships and Olympics and that kind of thing, you're a true world champion because you're competing against countries from all over the world.
Yeah.
And he got a lot of flack for that, particularly from NBA players, kind of messaged back on Twitter,
Or what about even like international basketball, like the Lithuanian team or something? Like, I feel like that group of people would be the most offended.
Well, because the Lithuanian team doesn't play in the NBA, like the NBA would be considered like the peak. Yeah, so
which it is,
and it is exactly. But can NBA champions call themselves world champions? And I tend to agree with Noah Lyles. I think he's absolutely right.
I know what you mean.
Lyles was saying, don't call yourself world champions because you're really just the champions of the United States. Like, you're the best basketball team in the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the world.
But if you win a gold medal in Olympics basketball.
Yes, then you would be world champions. That U.S. team that you're on,
right.
If the U.S. would win the world championship, would be the world championship team. But that's a different team than your NBA team.
Sure.
And
sure,
I agree with him.
Different
and
team.
People... I follow sports a decent amount, not like I used to, but a decent amount, and a lot of people were, they were like, who's this Noah Lyles guy? Somebody needs to tell him. And I was like, no, he's totally right. He's completely
right. It makes
sense.
Yeah.
I've always felt like running is the most popular participant sport in the world. It's not spectator sport. I think it's soccer. The cricket's way up there, too.
Yeah.
But participant sport, running is the most popular in the world. So to me, then... running is the most difficult sport to be the best at because you have the biggest numbers to compete against. You know, and you think about it, you have countries from all over the world who theoretically can put together or just offer up one great 10,000 meter runner.
Yeah.
It could be from Argentina, they could be from Kenya, they can be from Australia, it can be from the US, Great Britain, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Anywhere in the world can produce at least one great 10,000 meter runner.
Yeah.
But only one of these people can win. But that's not going to happen with certain sports with, say, like Nordic skiing.
Sure.
Argentina is not going to produce a top Nordic skier.
Right.
It's just a handful of countries in the world that they're competing against versus running, where you truly are competing against everybody in the world. There's not a lot of sports that can say that. And anyway, I thought it was really interesting. It did bring up a bit of a fun kind of conversation for a little bit.
Yeah.
About, and I thought it was great because it put a little spotlight on track and field.
Yeah.
And with regards to that too, just this is kind of just piggybacking on that, but you know the Netflix, the show about F1 called Drive to Survive. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay, it's like a documentary. They just followed different drivers, F1 drivers for the course of a season, and then they had one about golf, and they had one about tennis, and they had one about quarterbacks in the NFL. Well, they're doing one about track and field for this current year, I believe. And so next year, there will be a documentary series following different track and field runners throughout the course of the season. It's going to be great for the sport to show people kind of what the sport of track and field
it's all about.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was one of my thoughts, is the Noah Lyles comment, which I thought was really interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah.
But also, like, to his point, I mean, all the best players in basketball ultimately play in the NBA.
Yes.
But is that a different...
players.
But
right.
it's a different team aspect. It's not...
I would say you could probably argue, say, who won the world NBA championship. I don't even remember who it was right now. But I know the Milwaukee Bucks won a couple years ago. So we'll just say... the Milwaukee Bucks were probably the best basketball team in the world that year.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're world champions, I don't think. I think Lyles, I agree with Lyles on this.
Yeah. Could the Bucks beat any other Olympic basketball team, like from Argentina or from France?
Yes. Now, could the Bucks beat a conglomerate best player from France and the best player from Canada and the best player from Lithuania?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe. Probably, maybe it would be even.
That's essentially what the NBA is, right? Essentially, I mean.
Yeah.
It's all the best players from around the world.
True, yeah, that's true.
And then the fourth-rate players who don't make the bench, then they go to Lithuania and play their team.
Right, yeah, that's true, yeah.
We don't know.
But it was a good debate. I was glad to see Noah Lyles kind of stand up for track and field and make his point.
Funny. Yeah.
And all the track and field people were like, yeah, he's totally right.
Yeah.
And all the other, the kind of more mainstream sport people are like, what is he talking about?
Yeah. and just how, you know, you and I are excited about this track and field Netflix documentary. Like, it's always good to get a highlight on the sport. So if Noah Lyon can shake the cage a little bit,
right,
just get some people, like, that's probably what he's going for a little
bit.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Too.
He's always been good at that. Noah Lyon is, you know, definitely good for a quote.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Talk about it right now.
So. Yeah, exactly. And then one other quick little tidbit that I'm sure a lot of our listeners saw this, and I know, Mike, you saw this in the news as well. 11,000 runners were DQ'd from the Mexico City Marathon. 11,000 runners. And when I saw that headline, the first thing I thought was some volunteer screwed up.
Yeah.
The lead vehicle went the wrong way. Someone missed a sign somewhere.
Vandalism.
Yeah.
Something.
But no. Cheating. It was cheating. They were all like skipping the course. People were getting on buses. They were hopping in cars and cutting the course.
That's bizarre.
And this has happened multiple times at the Mexico City Marathon.
Why?
This is not the first time it's happened. I don't know. That was that I never really found any reasons like in the story that
cheating.
It was just like my assumption is like, what we do. I'm training for the marathon. I'm not gonna run the whole thing. I'm gonna take a bus halfway through.
Come on.
Yeah. That's what was even more bizarre to me than the 11,000 who were DQ'd. It was that the 11,000 who were DQ'd were literally cutting the course. Yeah. Not it wasn't an accident.
Deliberate.
It was on purpose. It was deliberate, yeah.
Did they all apply, like, did all these people know each other? Like, oh, you're in the cheating group? Like, really? Yeah, I saw that Facebook group. I'm in it too. Cool. Are you going to ride the bus or take a taxi?
So I'm thinking if you're like Boston Marathon and you're accepting applications, you're going to have to, anybody from Mexico City Marathon that qualified, nope, you're not getting in.
No, sorry.
We don't
swear
care.
I didn't cheat check my Strava.
Right.
Nope. Exactly. No does. Wow. Lesson learned. Don't cheat.
Yeah.
They'll catch you.
Don't cheat. Yes, but yeah, exactly. It's so much easier to catch cheaters nowadays than it used to be.
Bizarre. That is just bizarre. Next, we got Route of the Week. Route that I've been really fond of is Chester Park. It's my home course. Sometimes I don't run there for months on end, and then sometimes I just love it. And I've been loving it lately, especially the hills. It's been really fun for me to try and do these loops where I can, like, get as much vertical as possible just within the 6 miles of trail within the park. And climbing up that ski hill, it's so fun. It's kind of like the standard years of running, and that's just like this go-to hill climb spot. And a lot of fun options. I don't know, sometimes it just feels like Chester cannot get old. And then other times of the year, it just not vibing on it. But
it's a really interesting part because it's a tiny little plot of land.
Footprint.
Yeah, within the city. But it has different characteristics with Upper Bowl and Lower Bowl.
Yeah.
Massively different characteristics.
Definitely.
And then you throw in that ski hill, which has a whole other aspect.
Yeah.
I love the fact that there is, like, basically a trail right down the middle of it.
Yeah.
For people using it and doing hill repeats for
forever.
And I really like the new trail that's been built in there. That stuff is really nice.
The single track.
It flows really well. It was really needed on that part.
Definitely.
It's a really interesting park. I don't go there a ton myself.
Mm-hmm.
Especially not anymore. But it is. It's a great little spot. Literally right in the center of town.
Yeah. If you're looking to run trails and get some, uphill running or walking, that's my favorite spot. So.
Shout out to Dan Proctor.
Shout out to Dan. Yeah, absolutely. Next, we have a What I'm Into segment. So, Tony, what have you been into lately?
You know, I think not a lot, but I think since the cross-country season, high school cross-country season began, that's kind of that, and the kids have kind of, at least, I wouldn't say dominated my running thoughts, but they're kind of my priority, one of my priorities right now for sure. And
definitely.
We're having a really good season so far. It's been just a blast, and the kids are doing just tremendous work, and they're all super positive. We just have a really great team. Not necessarily, we have a great team performance-wise, but I mean, just great kids to be around. And every day at the end of practice, I'm like, can't wait for tomorrow.
Awesome.
You know, and go back and see. We have practice morning and the afternoons now, and I'm at both of those, and it's a lot of fun. So just a little bit of a shout out to the, not only the East cross country kids that I help coach, but all the kids that are doing cross country, Denfeld and Marshall and Superior and Proctor and Cloque Esco and everybody. And yeah,
fun.
Yeah.
The new year buzz is in the air.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. What do we got to wrap this up? I think it's just kind of some shout-outs. Do you have any shout-outs specifically, Tony, you want to mention here?
I have like two specifics and one broad.
Yeah.
Specific number one, shout-out to my wife, Gretchen, who ran the 50-miler yesterday. And she did it, and she is about as tough a person as I know. I knew she was going to do this race, and I knew she was going to do well and finish, and she did, and I'm really proud of her.
Yeah.
That was really cool to see. Shout out to our buddy Hypo, Dave Hypanen, who ran, a 452 mile at Minnesota Mile.
Yeah.
I know he'd been working towards that. That was a really smoking fast time.
Yeah.
Especially for a
Masters runner.
And I'll call him a young old dude. And then I brought the kind of a broad brush shout out to all the local Duluth people up at Superior.
Yeah.
And just on the leaderboards, there was like three or four Duluthians in the top three of the 100-mile, 50-mile, and marathon. It was really, actually just 50 and marathon.
Yeah.
Really impressive to see some really fast performances, but just everybody from Duluth up there at that race.
Definitely. Yeah. I want to echo that with a shout-out specifically to Tyler Kobylarczyk. Guy is just an animal. Does all types of skiing.
I don't know him at all.
He's like a cross-country skier, mountain biking, gravel, runner. But he set the course record this year with an 8:12 at the 50-mile.
Nice.
So, I mean, that's, I think, like around a 9-minute pace, roughly.
Yeah.
Maybe I have that wrong, but, I mean, that is so fast.
Yeah.
And get this. He's doing the Margie Giesick 50-50, they call it.
Yeah.
It's about a 60-mile rugged mountain bike. And then directly followed, I might have this wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's directly followed by around a 40-mile trail run.
Wow.
They call it the 50-50, but it's maybe closer to 60-40, he said. Next weekend.
Yeah.
That's in like 6 days as we record this.
Jeez.
7 days apart from this course record.
Rapid recovery.
Performance. Yeah. And so this guy's just an animal. And I follow him on Strava. I knew he was racing. I was kind of peeking, doing a little creeping and... Not a ton of high mileage, you know. I'm thinking, no, he'll do good, you know. He's just a fit dude type thing. But to go out and win with an 8:12 is just, and a course record is insane. And big shout out to Tyler. That's super cool. And
that's impressive.
It's just fun, you know, fun to see Duluth people on the top of the leaderboard like that. So,
yeah, definitely.
All three races up there. Yeah.
Cool.
All right, should we get to our interview section here, Tony?
Yeah, let's do that. This is going to be fun.